Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. Here is your host, Bill Kennard.
Welcome to the Prophet University audio series. I'm Bill Kennard. This month's program is titled Leadership Lessons from an NFL Coach. Being a good leader entails far more than just having a title. Instead, it involves layers of commitment, communication, solid relationships, and much, much more. This month, Coach Les Steckel joins us to discuss some of his key beliefs about what it takes to be and grow great future leaders. This presentation contains tips such as the 5 C's of leadership and the acronym ASK to help guide you in obtaining the best version of your leadership. Les Steckel is widely known for his career in the NFL. However, before the NFL, he spent 30 years in the Marine Corps, gaining rank and finally retiring as a Marine Corps colonel. One of the highlights of Les's 23-year coaching career in the NFL was being the offensive coordinator and going to the Super Bowl with the Tennessee Titans. In addition, he also coached several other teams, including the New England Patriots, Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, the San Francisco 49ers, and others before finishing his career as the running backs coach of the Buffalo Bills. After coaching, Les went on to author the book, 1 Yard Short, Turning Your Defeats into Victory. It's a story of his faith and how his relationship with God was a part of his coaching career and his ways of leadership. Les also then stepped up as a past president and CEO of Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And now, with leadership lessons from an NFL coach, here is Coach Les Steckel with this month's Prophet University audio series presentation. Well, Coach, it's a real honor to have you in the program here today. Coach, as we get started here, I guess we're going to jump right in because my guess is there's a ton of stuff that we're going to be able to talk about here as we look at leadership. There's really two aspects to leadership as I see it. Right? The first one is you are the leader. You're the one who's leading the charge. The second one is you're developing other leaders. Give us a little bit of background. I mean, you don't just go right to the NFL and you're hired, right? And you're a leader. I mean, you had something that got you there. Where did you get your or what would you consider as your leadership training?
Well, I graduated from college in 1968. And the next day I joined the Marine Corps after graduation. And the next thing you know, I was at Officer's Candidate School. And then after that, we went to what's called TBS or the Basic School. It's 26 weeks of training for Marines. And I have to tell you, Bill, that the 36 weeks I spent going through training taught me an awful lot about leadership. I was captain of the teams in high school and all that. I was president of my class and president of student body. But no one really taught me how to lead. It was just kind of a hit and miss kind of thing. But I learned a great deal about leadership from the Marines, and they gave us leadership principles to follow. And they were quite demanding, to say the least. In order to do your job, you need to have a little check the box, mm-hmm. see if you're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And there's no question. I think there's a lot of people who have gotten some of their leadership training in the military. There's a phenomenal method of developing, I think, in that role, isn't there?
There is. And, you know, Marines are pretty, as my wife says, they're most obnoxious brotherhood, no demand. it boils down to just a few things, I think, not to make it complicated. I think the troops are the players in the NFL or the men and women I work with in Fellowship of Christian Athletes. They needed to hear from me, and I needed to express it more than just words, but in action, that I cared about them. Mm-hmm. And when the troops know you care about them and you're concerned about their well-being and you want to keep them informed on what's going on, I think that's very important. I know the players always said, used to tease me, Coach, leadership principle number 4, keep the troops informed. And when I knew information that I could share with them, I would. If it was confidential, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. But without a doubt, I think as long as those people knew that you had a heart for them and you were really concerned for them, I think it goes a long way. And I've always preached with my family excuse me, and being a coach and being a president and CEO, it all boils down to one word, and that's relationships. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while to build relationships, but once you do with people, they see you care. It sure boosts the morale of the team, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. No question. So, yeah, I've got this whole list of questions that I'd just love to get your input on, because, yeah, again, so many of the people who are listening to this are they are leaders in their own right, yet many of them don't see themselves that way. They're the owner of a company, whether it's a family-owned business or something of that nature. Yeah, but there's quite honestly a lot of parallels to what they're doing versus what you did in a number of your roles. Right.
Yes.
So, now, you know, one has to think that if you're actually hired as a coach in the NFL, regardless of what level, somebody knows you got it. Right. But, you know, just looking at, you know, some of the teams that you coached for, you've had the opportunity to work for some pretty well-known coaches. At that level, do they do something to coach you as well, or it's either do your job or go? How is that handled?
Yeah, I didn't ever feel that. You know, somebody wanted to coach me up for my future. You know, it was so stressful and demanding that everybody just kind of came to work and worked endless hours. I know my wife would tell people I worked 16, 18 hours a day, and after a while they'd look at her and say, really? So she just said, my husband works a lot of hours. So, but it was a grind. It's a total grind. our youngest son now is in the NFL for 14 years, and everybody loves it because we get to see him here in Nashville. But we just went to dinner with him Sunday night after the game, and that's the first time we've sat down with him in some time. We did see him Thanksgiving Day, and then after training camp started in August, we haven't seen him, except in the parking lot after a game for about 10 minutes. So it's a grind.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, you know, at that point, so you're, you know, at that point, second generation in coaching, you know, within, if you will, call the family, the business, if you will.
Sure.
Does he now have a better appreciation for some of what you were dealing with as a leader back at that point?
I'm confident he does. We talk about it periodically, but Luke is, he's kind of like me, just keeps plugging along and working hard. I'm so proud of him because he survived all four head coaches here in Tennessee, which no one's done. He's the only guy in the building
really
that was here through those four coaches. And so he's done a great job, but he's quite a leader. I mean, Luke was captain of his high school team here in Tennessee that won a state championship. And then he went on to that football powerhouse, Princeton. Mm-hmm. And he was chosen captain of his team. And I admire him because they tell me he was the only captain ever chosen that didn't start the first 3 years. He only started his senior year, but because of his model, those 3 years prior to his senior year, with all his effort and energy and enthusiasm, without a doubt, the players saw who he was as a leader and chose him, and they won the Ivy League title that year, first time in many years.
Wow. So, you know, and that comes from somewhere, Coach. Remember that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he and I hung out a lot together, and, you know, it's, I think, you know, the old saying, apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, but
right,
a lot of times that apple falls way far away from the tree. So mm-hmm. We're grateful to have three adult kids we're blessed with.
Sure. Okay. So let's swing to the other side of that, the other aspect of leadership for a minute. I mean, you've had the opportunity over the years to coach some pretty, again, well-known players. And you look at some of these, there's some real personalities. There's you know, some egos involved at that level. I mean, who are some of the more challenging, I guess, that you see, and how do you deal with them as a leader?
You know, I tell people coaching in the NFL is a little different than what people would think. Dealing with the players was a piece of cake. And the reason I say that to you, Bill, is because They're all very competitive, and they want to be able to get better. And if they know you're trying to get them better as an athlete, and then later as a person, I hope they see me doing that, it's great. The thing that I learned when I first got started, there was a coach named John Wooden. He was the famous basketball coach at UCLA. And by far my favorite coach. Tom Landry was my favorite football coach. John Wooden was my favorite basketball coach. And I, I'm a basketball junkie going to Kansas University. So, by the way, we won the national title last year. I just throw that in.
You are correct. You are correct.
But John Wooden used the term individualization. And I was coaching two young receivers, Ahmad Rashad, who played at Oregon. His name was Bobby Moore at one time. And Sammy White, who played at Grambling. And I found within a short time this individualized perception. You have to treat people differently. Just like your children, they're all different personalities. The louder I yelled at Sammy White, the better he played. The softer I spoke to Ahmad, the better he played.
Okay.
If I raised my voice with Ahmad, he would go in the tank and plead, beg me not to yell. It was just interesting how that happened. And it was by accident as a young coach in my early 30s. But I learned that quickly. And I realized that you have to treat people individually. And the only way you can do that is get to know them.
It is really it's still a relationship business there, too, isn't it?
Totally.
So the. You know, when you're trying to learn those individual personalities, right? Because, you know, we bring somebody else into the team and it changes the team, right? So when we're trying to learn those personalities, I mean, that's you really have to kind of pay attention to them for a little bit individually, right? Not a part of the team, and what makes them tick. I mean, how did you go about doing that with, you know, because again, you're in a high pressure situation. How did you go about getting to know those people in a relatively compressed period of time?
Well, in the off season, I would always have a meeting individually with them to discuss their goals and to learn something about them. And as I did with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, with those staff people, you know, I asked them to bring a picture of their family, tell me what their responsibilities are and what their goals are. And then lastly, if there was a confidential comment that they wanted to share that they would trust me with. And it would break the ice pretty much. You know, what I found was when you ask about difficult personalities, you know, what I found in leadership, Bill, leaders do not confront when it's necessary. And at times they're very puzzled. They push it to the side or bury their head in the sand, as people say, or just go forward and hope it goes away. But what I learned by accident one day, you know, I called a player in. And I used it for years. You know, I said, you know, I got to share something with you. And what I'm going to share, you're going to interpret one of two ways. Either I'm a jerk or I care about you. I think it's probably going to be the first, but I hope it's the latter. And then I said, are you ready to hear what I have to share? And when I share, I'd say probably 9 out of 10 go storming away. But they'll come back 2 days later, 2 weeks later, believe it or not, 2 months later. But every single time they'll come back in and say, Coach, you were right. And I appreciate you willing to confront it. And thanks for helping me. But confrontation, people don't like it. I always used to ask our staff with FCA, you know, how many of you, you know, like confrontation? Raise your hand. Well, nobody raised their hand. Neither did I.
Right.
I don't like it either.
Yep.
But as a leader, you have to have that ability. And the other thing that I share about leadership, Bill, is people in positions like that, they want to be liked. They want to be popular. That's wonderful. But more importantly, you should be doing your job and taking care of your troops, like I've always said.
So I want to go back for a moment just to that question or that dealing with confrontation the way that you have, because you're right. I do think a lot of business owners just flat out don't, you know, if I don't deal with it, it'll just go away.
Exactly.
So not making a decision is making a decision, isn't it? Right. I mean,
it is.
It's going to play out some way. How do you see How quickly do you think you need to have that confrontation conversation with somebody on the team?
Well, I mean, it comes pretty obvious. You know, you give them the benefit of the doubt initially, and next thing you know, you see the attitude of a player or his verbiage on the field or in the locker room. That's one thing that coaches didn't do. I always walked around the locker room and visited with players. I felt like I was in a ghost town. I mean, I never saw a coach in there. I mean, after games in particular that we lost, I couldn't wait for Monday morning. I'd be down in the locker room greeting the players. And I was just an assistant coach when I was a young guy, working for Bud Grant with the Vikings. But I knew one thing for sure. They needed some encouragement, and they weren't getting it. And I really believe in trying to encourage people and bring them to a level that their capacity can be just a full tank. And so, you know, I just – once you see something's getting out of hand, you got to address it. Now, you address it by saying, here's what I've seen. Here's what I've heard. Correct me if I'm wrong. And, you know, a lot of times they'll admit it, but sometimes they'll try to make an excuse or two. And I, you know, I just tell them that's the way you see it. But here's where I'm seeing it and others in the team are seeing it.
Okay. You know, as you talk about that, there's this perception again of, you know, what's going on inside the NFL and in the locker rooms. And it's, many times very different than what you're explaining. Right. And so, again, my guess is that this ability for you to have that conversation of, I'm going to tell you something and you may not like it, but, I think that fact that you're there on Monday morning, earns you the right to have that conversation very comfortably with team members, isn't it?
It does. I mean, you know, again, leadership's all about setting the example. That's what I learned in the Marine Corps. I mean, you know, you try to train your men as a team. That's what they taught us about, you know, set the example. I mean, in the Marine Corps, I mean, you know, your shoes had to be spit polished, you know, and your uniform was immaculate, you know, just everything impeccable. They really pushed it. My personality, I've taken a lot of personality tests, and I always fall on the perfectionist side, which is kind of a sick thing to have at times because you beat yourself up too much. But I try my best to do my best wherever I'm at, what I'm doing. But at the same time, you can't expect those kind of standards to be with everyone. But, you know, I will say this. There's something I use with the players all the time. And it was, I would say, ask yourself every day when you come to work. I said, ask yourself. A stands for attitude. S stands for skills, and K stands for knowledge. And when you come to work, everybody can see your attitude. The custodian can come and tell me if you have a good attitude or not, just by the way you handle yourself in the hallway or the locker room.
Sure.
Your skills as an athlete, your skills as a journeyman in the business world, are you trying to improve those skills every day? And if you are, great. If you're not, that's on you. And your knowledge, there's great, you know, people just don't work at their knowledge. You know, I see a lot of young people today, Bill, and I'm going to sound like a real old geezer now. They're playing video games constantly, and they're not encouraging people. School, I just met with a lady the other day. She working with fourth grade kids in inner city Nashville, and they can't read. They're 9 years old. And people are not increasing their knowledge. They're not people helping them. Now, that's a crazy example, but I think if I had an employee who came to work every day with a great attitude, tried to really take advantage of the skills and gifts that God's talented them with, and then increase their knowledge every day, oh my goodness, what kind of team can you have? And that was something I tried to push every team that I was on. ASK, ask yourself every day.
Are you hitting those things? I like that. That's a that's a great one. You know, what about you know, as you're looking at these people coming in? I mean, there's times I'm sure that you had somebody on a team that you recognized they either were or they could be the next leader, but they didn't necessarily see it in themselves. How did you get them to realize their potential?
You know, that's a great question. You know, most of the time, the players would surface. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, our 1999 Tennessee Titans team. That was 23 years ago. But that year we went to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And we lost the game on the last play of the game.
Heartbreak.
1 yard short. I'm sure you'll see it every Super Bowl Sunday. They show it. And my wife will remind me when they show it, maybe we'll score this time, she would always say.
You never know. But, it's on the replay. Right?
Yeah, we didn't. But without a doubt, you know, we had two guys, Eddie George, very, very verbal guy, just enthusiastic. And he came to me one day and he said, "Coach, are you going to keep talking to us the way you do on Wednesday morning when you present the game plan on Saturday night?" And I go, "Well, yeah." He said, "Oh, man, you got to. It gets me fired up, gets all of us fired up." I said, "Well, okay. And he was just this emotional, passionate, outspoken guy. And he was the guy that talked to the team just before we took the field. Mm. And then there was Bruce Matthews, who played, I think, 16 or 17 years and never missed a game. Mm. And Bruce was the most quiet, humble guy. And I'd always have one player stand up and say something to the team on Saturday night. And so I went up to him one night. I said, "Bruce, I'm going to call on you when I'm done talking, just to say a word or two with the team." He goes, "Me? You want me to stand up and talk to the team?" I said, "Bruce, you're captain of the team, you and Eddie." And he goes, "Oh, well, okay. What do you want me to say?" I said, "Whatever you want to say, Bruce. I mean, here's a Hall of Fame player."
Yeah.
So I said, "Bruce, you want to share something with the team?" And he stood up and he said, "You know, I just have one thing to share." He said, "Coach Stecko reminded us in training camp, it's amazing how much can be accomplished when no one cares who gets the credit." I'm going to tell you something, Bill. Mm. I told the players that at the beginning of the year, and I saw we were a very unselfish team. It's a great quality to have. It's my favorite Bible verse, Luke 9:23,
yep.
Where it says to deny yourself. Unfortunately, the word daily is in that verse, so you got to deny yourself every day. That means be unselfish.
Right.
But Bruce brought that up, and I tell you, our team took it and ran, and we were undefeated at home. We won 16 games that year. That's a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something. Now, to add to that comment, I'm not sure if I've ever influenced anyone to be a leader, except maybe my oldest grandson, who in high school last year, he played high school football in Texas. And I said to him, I said, "Gage, you know, you have capacity to lead, but you don't do that. So I'm going to challenge you each and every day at practice in the game to do three things. I want you to be enthusiastic. I want you to give full speed effort. And I said, I want you to bring lots of energy. Energy, effort, enthusiasm. Gage, every day at practice, every day, you got to do that." Well, sure enough, he became captain of the team, this quiet little guy who now is plenty big, mm-hmm. playing college football, and I couldn't be more proud of him to be at Wheaton College as a freshman playing on the football team. And he still remembers those 3 E's that I shared with him.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you say that, right, that he's the only person that you ever inspired, you know, directly to be a leader. But, look at Luke, right, your son, and what he's doing, and what he accomplished in high school and in college and now in the pros. And, you know, again, that comes from somewhere. The apple didn't fall far away. So if I can't, let me take you back to that season, that 99 season, because, you know, in your book, you open the book with a line that immediately hooked me. Right. And you know, so, and you can fill in a little bit of the background, right? But yeah, in the book, One Short Yard, you open it up and you uttered it from the, if I remember correctly, you were in the box still coaching. I mean, what, one play left, two plays left, 16 seconds left, if I remember, right? And you said, "Lord, I never want to coach again." Now, every single business leader, every company owner has at some point uttered that same prayer, right? I don't want to do this again. Now, how do you shift from that, right? So first off, you got to fill in the reality of what actually happened, right? But then I want to talk for a minute about, about that mental shift a little bit after that, if we can. So go ahead and fill us in real quick, the thumbnail sketch of that, what led you to that moment.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, Bill, I remember it to this day vividly. I'm sitting there in Buffalo in our first playoff game, kicked the field goal to take the lead for the first time, and we only had 16 seconds to go. And my first reaction was the players that we have, they gave it so much. And I just couldn't get over. My heart just felt for these guys. I had such heavy feelings for the players, for the coaches, for the ownership. Gosh, the fans, the people in Tennessee, realized all the work that we did, 16, 18 hours. When we came to Nashville from Houston, we went to Memphis and played in the Liberty Bowl.
Right.
And I have to tell you that we played our home games in Memphis, and they booed us before every game. And when our opponents scored, they would cheer. And when we scored, they'd boo us because they won an NFL team, and Nashville did. That sure was a rough year. And then we come to Vanderbilt, play there before our stadium was built. And when you'd walk in, it would be black and gold for the Pittsburgh Steelers and blue and orange, blue and purple for the Baltimore Ravens and so forth. And it was really a challenge, to say the least. And I just had all this running through my head and feeling for these guys who gave it everything they had. Here's our first chance to be in the playoffs, and now we're down by 16 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I told people that we practiced this play every Saturday for 3 years, and we're going to use it on a rainy day. Well, that rainy day came, and it was a miracle because what was to happen was one of our players was to catch the kickoff and throw it across the field to our tight end, Frank Wycheck, who then in turn would throw it back across the field to Derek Mason, our receiver. However, Derek Mason got injured, and so Kevin Dyson, the rookie, was in. And then the guy who caught the kickoff was a guy named Lorenzo Neal, our fullback. And I always tell people, Bill, he couldn't catch a cold, much less catch a kickoff. And so he caught the ball, and knowing that he couldn't throw it across there, he ran over and handed it to Frank, okay, which made the play even more miraculous because the whole cover team went over to Frank, and then he threw it back, and it was home field sailing down the left sideline, and we won the game. But my heart was so heavy for the players because I really did care about them, and I just thought, man, this is tough business to go through these kinds of emotions. So. Mm-hmm. There you have it.
So now you went from, and that's, I guess, where I want to pick up. And that question is, okay, you went from 16 seconds left to the game, almost at, in the pits, right? Feeling this way, and I never want to do this again, to 16 seconds later, you won the game and are in the playoffs. And, so how does, does the mind, because a lot of business owners don't get that much of an immediate shift, right? So do you recover that real quick, or did that feeling of I never want to do this again linger for a while, even through the playoffs, or you didn't have time to think about it, or where were you?
Well, I honestly, I know this may sound corny or cheesy or whatever, but it's true. When you're a strong believer as a Christian, you're to have a relationship with Christ. And right. When I said that, I immediately heard a voice saying, "Do you have faith?" And Steve Walters, who was the wide receiver coach for us at the time, sitting next to me, a wonderful man, I said, "Yes, I have faith." And I said it out loud, and he looked at me like, What? What did you just say? Mm-hmm. And fast forward, I had faith, and God was saying, "Well, just watch what happens." Mm-hmm. And sure enough, that happened. I honestly... when I go to games, I'm so focused and locked in. That's a quality. We've taken all these personality tests. I hardly feel the audience. I feel the fans at the game. But I thought people were jumping out of the stadium. I've never seen a football stadium that wild. And as I told my wife later after the game, if they had reversed the call, I don't think any one of those officials would have gotten out there alive. So I think they knew there. But thanks to Joe Theismann, who drew it up on the on the teleprompter, on the television screen, it truly was a lateral.
Sure.
And as my wife said 3 years later, when you go to Buffalo, if they ask you, was it a lateral or forward pass? I said, you know the answer I'm going to tell them. And she said, what is it? I said, forward pass. Okay. The Bills fans would have gotten really upset
Just
with
to
me.
mess with them, right?
The good question is they never asked. So I didn't have to fib on that one.
Didn't have to defend yourself on that one. So, as we look at that now, yeah, and again, you ultimately that one last play, right? One short yard in the Super Bowl and missed that one. But considering where that team came from and what they came through the years before, that's they truly did pull together. And so let me ask this question is, how do you create that culture amongst the team? Because culture has so much. I mean, it comes from the top, right? It can be destroyed easily from either direction, right? But comes from the top. Every year is a brand new group of guys that you're working with. How do you build that? Is there something you do to try and build that culture amongst the team each and every year as you get started?
I believe so. You know, what I feel is, communication is critical for a mm-hmm. leader. But you know what's really important in communicating? Listening. Mm. And my wife and I have done marriage seminars around the country since 1984. And I love doing them with her. She's fantastic. We do them mainly. We've done them for businesses, and that's been a lot of fun because people who have a business and love football bring us in and hire us to put on a seminar for 2 or 3 days,
sure.
or sometimes just a full night. But we talk about the 5 C's and how do you build a championship team. And we talk about communication, cooperation, contribution, commitment, and Christ. And I always tell people that Chris was the center on the basketball team of our 5-man team.
Chris being your wife.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I'd bring the ball down the court as a point guard. I'd call the play. But everything revolved around her. And she was the center. My oldest son was a shooting guard. My daughter was the toughest of the three kids. And so she was the power forward, and Luke, our football player, wanted to be that, but I said, "Nah, you're the other guy." So, so we always talked about being a basketball team and how we have to pass the ball to each other, a few round the back passes, but totally be unselfish because the object of the game is to score and to win and to be victorious together. Mm-hmm. And I used to have a theme I learned from a gentleman named Raymond Berry, who I coached for at New England for 4 years. Mm-hmm. Finest Christian man I've ever met in my life. And for those that are listening, I'm sure many of you as a football fan remember Johnny Unitas, the Hall of Fame mm-hmm. quarterback.
Who can forget?
But his receiver was Raymond Berry, the Hall of Fame receiver for the Baltimore Colts. And Raymond was the finest Christian model I ever saw. And he had a theme, together we win. And I took that and ran with it. And I tried to sell that wherever I went. And togetherness means being unselfish. But what I learned also, when you're a team leader, yes, it's great to communicate and for sure make have a cooperative spirit. But the thing that I learned was everybody on a team wants to contribute. Mm-hmm. And so what I used to do with the game plan, Bill, even when I was with the president of FCA, and certainly at times in the Marine Corps, when I had to rely on my staff sergeant and my platoon fire squad leaders, mm-hmm. I would bring them together and I would say, okay, how are we going to do this? And they'd look at you like, what? You're the guy calling the shots. I said, well, you may have a better idea than I do.
Yep.
So let's go with it. And so, every Monday morning I'd walk into a room and I'd say, how are we going to beat the Oakland Raiders? Well, they're not the Oakland Raiders anymore. But how are we going to beat these guys? Mm-hmm. And I'd go around the room. Here's what I see. Here's what I think. Here's what I think is a weakness here. Blah, blah. I'd take all these notes. And then I'd calculate all that and go back to work. And I would rely on them. And then afterwards, we'd put a game plan together. And I'd say, Joe, hey, last week you gave me 2 great ideas. This week I'm not going in that direction. But don't have your feelings hurt. Mm-hmm. You got next week. Right. And Bobby, we're going to do this. And John, blah, blah, blah. But believe me, when people have input, a contribution to the team, mm-hmm. that is essential for moving forward. You know what it does? Just what I said earlier. It boosts the morale of the team.
What a great bite, don't you think?
Absolutely. Communication, cooperation, contribution, commitment, and Christ. Right. And I've always said my wife, she was the cheese and the macaroni and cheese. I mean, she kept us together.
Yep. So, okay, then that actually brings me to another question. It leads right into it naturally is, you know, you talked about it earlier, right? The 16, 17 hour days, the demands that are there. You know, again, it's easy, even in a role that doesn't have those kind of demands on you, to get sucked in and spend a lot of hours at work. All right. I'm a recovering workaholic, so I know it all too well. you know, right. And you say you're never out of that. Right. So it's something I need to focus on every single day as I lead here. But how then how do you manage or manage isn't the right word. How do you protect the marriage? Because that relate, because for me, quite frankly, if my marriage doesn't survive, if that's not good, then I'm not good here. Right. And how do you protect that under those kind of strains?
Yeah, well, I feel blessed for 48 years of marriage. And I said to my wife the other day when we're having coffee and having our quiet time, I said, I call her Preppy. She went to Berkeley, the most liberal school in America. And she was at Berkeley while I was fighting a war with the Marines in Vietnam. And we met on a flag football team, and my Marine buddies nicknamed her Preppy.
Okay.
And so I've been calling her that ever since. So I said, hey, Prep, you know, you're the perfect wife. And she said, no, I'm not. And I said, yes, you are. She said, I may be the perfect wife for you, but I'm not the perfect wife. And she is, because she absolutely loves sports. I tell you, Bill, I have to watch the Predators and ice hockey. I got to watch the soccer, the World Cup. I know. Yeah, I got to watch that. I got to watch the golf on Saturdays when we're home. I mean, she is into sports like no other. And so I share that to say that I had a preppy pad at my desk. Okay. And when things would come up or thoughts that I had for the upcoming week or whatever, I'd write them all down, and I would make time once a day, for sure once a week, and we would cover those items. The second thing that we learned our first week of marriage was to always have a date night. So Friday nights we had date nights. And so on Fridays, for example, here in Nashville, she said, I'll pick up the pizza. I'll meet you in the end zone at Brentwood High School, and we'll watch the high school game. I go, really? I got to stand and watch a high school game? That's our date? And she said, yes. I said, all right. So that's what I did. Hmm. Well, little did I know, she enjoyed it. We ate pizza. We talked. We caught up. And the kids were old enough to go on their way. When they were much younger, we'd have a family meal. And that way we'd be together. But Friday night was our night as a family. But I can tell you, Bill, if it was a road trip and we got back late at night, I wouldn't see my kids till Friday night.
Sure.
And if it was a home game, I'd see them Saturday afternoon. But other than that, I didn't. So what I did was I communicated with them at the coffee machine. I'd have the junk mail, and I'd write a note to Leslie and to Christian and to Luke, and I'd throw it in front of their bedroom doors. And then when I left at 5 o'clock in the morning, they would read it, like, good luck with your chemistry test, or I understand your essay, you got an A on it. Or good luck tomorrow in the basketball game. I hope that you'll win. I'm sorry I can't make it, that kind of thing. And, you know, they knew that I was there with them. And it's something, it takes just a few minutes, but you got to be creative. And to me, the greatest leadership that anyone has as a man is his husband, being a great husband and a great dad. Do that first before you go anywhere else. And in order to do that, I think those five C's will help you.
And I can't agree with you more than that, because if you're not taking care of business at home, you're not going to be effective, not in the long run, at the office.
No,
because other people, your team, the people that are on your team are watching what you're doing as a leader. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
All right. So Let's,
you know, Bill, you just said something I want to throw in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have sayings in our family, and, you know, I quiz the kids every so often, even though they're 44 and 41 and 38 now. But I know, Dad, I know we're going to get what you see. You know, I used to tell my wife all the time, we're going to get what they see.
Mm-hmm.
And if they see us going in the same direction together and agreeing with each other, and yes, we're on board this way, we both agree on this, and this is what we're doing. There's no going to Dad and asking for the car keys, and then, you know, Dad says no, then he goes to Mom, and Mom says yes. That doesn't work.
Right.
And so, you know, what they see is what we're going to get. And the other thing that I say, and it happens every day, and my kids get tired of me telling them, what you do today will affect tomorrow. You know, it's so obvious. You know, Bill, I got to tell you, I've been reading Proverbs.
Mm-hmm.
When I became a Christian, I did not have a clue what I was doing. I didn't come from a Christian home. We didn't go to church. Every so often, my parents would drop me off in the church. And I'd run in and grab the program, then run out the back and go in the alley to a store and play the pinball machine and come out the church and show them my program and yay. But a friend of mine, actually Bruce Bickle, who flew Navy jets, played quarterback behind Roger Staubach at the Naval Academy, said, Les, why don't you just start reading Proverbs? There's 31 chapters, and, you know, there's usually 30 days in the week. You know, right. Read two chapters at the end. And I can tell you, try reading Proverbs every day since 1972. If you want to be a good business owner, you want to be a good leader, there is more information in the book of Proverbs than anywhere you can go. Seminars, nowhere. Now, here's what I tell people. And I know I'm getting long-winded here.
No, you're good.
But I read the Living Bible Translation, LB. LB stands for linebackers. And the reason I tell people I read the linebacker edition is because even linebackers can understand what it says. So without a doubt, get a Living Bible Translation, read Proverbs every day. It will give you more guidance than you'll ever know on how to lead.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, when did that happen for you? At what point in your
life? It happened in 1972.
Okay.
Bruce told me that. And I said, okay, I'm going for it. And I started reading it. And then my wife in 1989 bought a Living Bible translation for me. And boy, I'll tell you what, it really has helped. And it's, you know, I've had to bound it twice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just go through it. And it's so important. I read, obviously, the Bible, but every day I try to at noon when I was coaching. And don't get me wrong, I don't do it every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I've actually read the Bible two straight years in a row, thanks to your friend Gene Heacock, who challenged me. And I haven't missed a day since January 1st, 2021. So
nice. So pick. I just want to. You said okay. So every day at noon. Right. Is that when you take your time out of your day to spend?
Well, everybody takes a lunch break and that type thing. And, you know, I just go into my office and read Proverbs and kind of finalize the practice schedule, whatever it was. Or when I was the president of FCI, I'd generally be on the road and I would do it on the airplanes. But when I was at the office, which, by the way, what I did, and I don't know if other leaders should, but I believe so hard. When I would come back, my wife and I'd be on the road for two and a half weeks in a row, trying to, you know, grow the ministry, which it exploded in our 12 years. But I'd come in the office, I'd drop my briefcase, I'd turn to my executive assistant, who was a wonderful woman, and I said, I'm going to do the rounds. I'll be back in an hour and a half. And I'd walk on each floor and stop and see these people and ask them, hey, I understand your son's still in Afghanistan. I understand your son in a wrestling tournament. I understand your daughter's getting married. And they look at you like, how did you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I made the rounds, I came back in and wrote that stuff down and then put it in a file. And then I'd review it real quick before I went again. Now, was that being a phony? I don't think so. That tells me that they know I'm interested in who they are. And that's what I get back to. Let them know you care.
Yep. Without a question of a doubt. So the, Wow. that part of it, I think, is so, because that goes back to some of that communication again, too, right? It's right. Not only communication at work. It's hey, who are you? What's going on at home? Where can we come alongside you and you know, give you strength and help you with that part of the puzzle? So you've mentioned, of course, you were president of FCA, and how or what led you to move in that direction and to take on that role?
Yeah, Bill, I tell you, it was, man, it was out of nowhere. Mm. I can share this and you can take it out if you want, but it all started in 1999. It was July 11th. Chris and I were on an Alaskan cruise, Charles Stanley Alaskan cruise, and the Lord threw me out of bed at 4 a.m. I mean, you don't want to see what I look like at 4 a.m, but I was so wide awake, honest to goodness. And I got down on my knees and I said, Lord, what's this all about? And I heard in five years, you're going to be in the ministry. And I went, what? So I just stayed quiet. And I heard it one more time. And as my wife said, I ruined our vacation because that's all I talked about. Because she knew that I never wanted to be a football coach. And my buddies and everybody kept saying, you'd be a really good football coach because you love football. Well, I love football, but I didn't want to be a coach because mm-hmm. most coaches, you know, berated and belittled and, you know, just made fun of you. And they were extremely overweight. And I saw them alcoholics and cheating on their wives and all that. I didn't want to be one of those guys. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, God put me in a business that I hopefully was a model at. But so next thing you know, fast forward 5 years later, and I'm having a quiet time. It's a Super Bowl, and it was January of 2004, and I got my prayer logs out. Charles Stanley's always challenged me, and he's one of many who endorsed my book, One Yard Short. And it said that July 11th, it said at 4:00 a.m, the Lord threw me out of bed. It was in red ink in my prayer log. I went, oh, my gosh. And I counted. I went, my goodness, that's 5 years ago. So I go to church, and Mike Glenn's our senior pastor. We have a large mega church. Now it's about 12,000 members. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
And he came up to me afterwards and said, Coach, if you get tired of coaching, I got a job here for you at the church. And I went, what? And he said, we actually don't have anybody in charge of men's ministry. And you know how many people we had. At the time, I think they had 8,000 or 9,000. Mm-hmm. So sure enough, in the ministry I went, a year later, FCA made a phone call and said, we'd like to interview you. You're one of 36 candidates. we've been interviewing people for 18 months. Would you be interested in interviewing? I said, well, yeah, because I just love the ministry so much.
Sure.
I said, sure. And then when I took the job, Bill, I got to confess, and you out there that's listening as leaders, I told the National Board of Trustees, which I was a member of, my wife and I were the only couple to ever be members at the same time. I told them I was totally clueless. Mm. And at the first meeting after 6 months, and 6 months later, I started the meeting by telling them I was totally clueless. And my wife said, honey, you got fired in the NFL. They're going to fire you in FCA. I said, babe, I'm so transparent, but I didn't know what I was doing. It was so big a job. I mean, take Marine Corps and NFL, now put it in the ministry.
Right.
And boy, what a transition. But I learned one thing for sure, that the people joined FCA to minister athletes and coaches, and I knew their morale was down. And the reason their morale was down is because they didn't have any money. And these people were spending 80% of their time, you know, nonprofits trying to raise money to support themselves, mm-hmm. and 20% of the time doing their job. And it became 90-10. Once we got the ball rolling, it was exciting to see that everyone's morale was boosted and the good things were happening. So there you have it. That's how I got involved with FCA.
Well, you know, and again, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, again, wonderful organization, touches, again, so many lives. And so, you know, quite frankly, you only continued doing that even after you left, weren't coaching anymore. You were still coaching.
Yes.
All right. So the I just want to circle back to this one piece, right? And I'm going to hit
sure.
two real quick questions here, Les. And the first one is, while we're on that topic of faith, you know, it's when you were in the heat of it, right? And you kind of hinted at it a little bit, but again, how do you live out your faith? There are amazing number of people who are leaders of companies that that are men and women of faith, but aren't, you know, maybe sure how to live that out, how to be, you know, even be bold about their faith when they're leading. Can you give any thoughts on that piece of the puzzle?
You know, Bill, you know, it just jumped in my head and I forgot all about it. But 2004, I taught two classes. One was on Tuesday morning. We called it the Tuesday Morning Quarterback Club. And a group of men came to me and said, we really want to be involved in that, but we have to be at work early. Could you do it Wednesday night? And I called it Top Gun for Wednesday night. And in order to come, you obviously could be a member of our church. But what we did, we were able to reach out and get a lot of the presidents and CEOs of companies and corporations here in Nashville to come mm-hmm. either Tuesday morning or Wednesday night. And I basically told them that their position was pretty much a podium, you know, a pulpit. Mm-hmm. And it was opportunities to share. And I really believe that, it's your actions, it's your behaviors, you know. You know, I used to challenge them. I'd say, you know, your reputation is what men think you are. Your character is what God knows you are.
Yeah, right.
And there's a difference. You know, I got this sign here. I still have it on my desk in my study today, but I always had it in my office. And it says this: preach Christ at all times. If necessary, use words.
Use words, yep.
And, you know, there would be players coming in and they say, Coach, you know, what's that all about? I see your Bible open. Hey, let me read something out of the Bible. And I can remember this one quarterback. I just loved him. He was so coachable. Great player with the New England Patriots. And he goes, that stuff's in the Bible? And I go, yeah. So my point is that when you build relationships and you live it out, I mean, we all remember the book, Good to Great. Yep. Remember that one by Jim Collins?
Jim Collins, yeah.
One of the qualities of the five top companies in the world was the president and CEO had a humility. Mm-hmm. Humility was a great virtue by these leaders. Of all the people they interviewed, only five. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a little sign in my office. I said, humility is an elusive thing. When you think you have it, you've lost it.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah. I think what's really important is that when you lead, by example, with your Christian faith, you know, they want to see it through your actions, not your words.
Yep. And or not a plaque on the wall or something like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's where people, you know, got in trouble. I mean, when I came with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes initially, and I know it's changed drastically. Particularly this gentleman who took over after me, he's going 100 miles an hour on the ministry. And I emphasize coaches as number one. Mm-hmm. And he is doing the same because he was once a coach and he saw what I was talking about, where guys had plaques on the wall and this and that, mm-hmm. and they weren't living it. But they're discipling coaches all across the country now, from the high school, college, and yes, trying to get into the professional ranks. It's amazing what's happening in the world of sports, but I think leadership is so important when a leader lives out his values.
Would totally agree. And I was going to ask you kind of as a final question, in your opinion, what's the key to leading and developing other leaders? I think that statement certainly plays in. Anything else you would add to that? I don't know if you need to, but anything else you would add to that?
No, I think just being a model, I think being a mentor, you know, when I talk about confronting players, mm-hmm. I think there are people and people have asked me to be their mentor now that I'm an old geezer, soon to be 77, and I don't feel it. I really don't. And but I sense that there are a lot of young people in their 30s and 40s. We just went to a Christmas party recently. Mm-hmm. And we live in Brentwood, Tennessee, which is an affluent neighborhood. And it's become extremely affluent now because scores and scores, I should probably say hundreds and hundreds of families have moved in from California, New York, Connecticut, Chicago, where they've made a lot of money and they can come here and buy lots of property and build these gigantic, I call them Hummer houses. You know, they're so big, you know, people drive Hummers and they want to say, look at me, I got a Hummer, you know, but right. They're just gigantic homes. And we went to this party, and surprisingly, there were a lot of people in their late 30s, early 40s. And you could just sense their value in the way they conducted themselves, the way they spoke. You just said, man, somebody needs to put their arm around them and say, you know, I've seen a lot of people go down that path, me included. I write about it in my book, One Yard Short. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was as driven as anybody ever wanted to be. But once God got my attention, I went through a brokenness of 1990, and I call it my 13 best, 13 worst months of my life. Mm-hmm. And I finally saw what was important in living out my faith. And I tell you, since 1990, to reflect on all the things that occurred in my life that were fantastic. And yet, if I was honest, I had nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. The good Lord had everything to do with it,
yep.
Including the miracle on that day and writing this book, etc. So with that being said, I would say to people out there, take a minute, as I challenge people when they get older, slow down and reflect on your life. Sure, take more risk in your business world, but know this, I would encourage you to return some of your resources to the next generation, because the next generation, I believe, needs to be educated, and particularly on the Bible.
Absolutely, without a question of a doubt. Coach, this has been a blast for me. I certainly appreciate your time, spending a little bit of time with us and sharing some of the wisdom that you've certainly collected over the years, and certainly graced with. Appreciate you being here.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Please feel free to give us a call at 877-202-8891. The vision of Grandy & Associates is quite simple. We teach companies how to run profitable businesses. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or give us a call at 1-877-202-8891. Profit University Audio Series is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line at 1-877-202-8891. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.